Hi, guys. Good night. My name's Marshall.
Hello, Marshall.
Housekeeping. I'll play first. Thank you to the Mosaic Image group for inviting me to share what little I know. I'll do what I can and whatever. It's an honor to be invited to share anywhere. And I special place in my heart for this group. I really enjoyed the opportunity to do a little service in helping get this group off the ground. So it's kind of cool being able to share here tonight. For those who aren't familiar with the NA program, I'm going to be sharing my experience, not the whole fellowship's. If I piss you off, then be pissed off at me. Don't be pissed off at the fellowship. And it's neat to have faces of who I call friends here. But it's also a little scary because these are the folks that call me on my truth. And how close to it I'm actually coming. So if I said that I wasn't nervous, I'd be a liar. It's a program of honesty. Yeah, I'm a little nervous. I've had lots of opportunities to share my story. It's been a long time since I've had to share for more than 20 minutes or a half hour. And who knows what this will take or where it'll take us. That being said, I grew up here in Winnipeg and for whatever reason, didn't like me. Found ways to feel different about that. My using history goes something like this. I used something. It gave me that spinny head feeling. I liked it. I used more. It stopped working. I tried something else. Got the spinny head feeling. I used more. It stopped working. I added something to it. And I added something to it, and I added something to it. Eventually, like I stopped liking whatever it is that I was putting in me. I just had to put it in. As you know, I'm a really athletic type, so I was always like chosen first for all sports things as a kid. Usually, I was right after the substitute teacher with the broken leg. You know, my family loved me the best way they could. I was my grandmother's favorite grandchild. She kept telling me that. And I was always reminded that if I only took off 10 pounds, I'd be really handsome. I was a bright kid. I successfully made it through school without really being needing to pay attention, gratefully, because I had started putting stuff in me by the on a regular basis by the time I was 11. I have two university degrees, and I probably couldn't repeat to you any of the stuff that I studied in there. It's muscle memory. I'm not in the same condition that I was in when I studied. I haven't been in that condition for a long time. I successfully destroyed seven or eight great relationships with wonderful women. I rose to the top of several industries. Each of these things, I was given a choice, either act out in my addiction or continue on with these things. I had no decision in the process at all. I could not stop using. this didn't make well, you know what, I really did feel shitty about me. I hated me. I started at the top of the world and worked my way down. And eventually I found a career that using seemed to be not just acceptable, but almost a prerequisite. And got suspended for using on the job. Or using too much on the job. And my boss called the police and let them know where it was that I was staying. And the police arranged for me to have a little bit of a break in my using career. And that career ended. I called my folks when I got out of jail and asked them for money to get home. And they had watched me spiral rapidly down over 30 years. And they said, no, we're not sending you any money. But go to the Greyhound station. There will be a bus ticket. After 7 or 8 days of using and whatever after jail, I picked up the bus ticket and came back to Winnipeg and found another career that I couldn't use illegal drugs anymore. I could only use things that I pay taxes on. Because the job involved my doing random drug tests. I'd spent most of my life randomly testing drugs, so I figured it was the perfect career for me. But that meant that what they meant was that they were going to test me as to whether or not I was using these things randomly, and I was only allowed one specific one. And I rose to the top of that career, and my career came to a crashing halt. I was a long-haul truck driver, and I rolled my Sammy. My truck was tired of having a drunk behind the wheel, so it demonstrated that by laying down and having a nap. In that accident, I fractured my skull, splattered my nose across my face, lost all the skin on the left side of my face, snapped my left arm in half. A friend of mine came from Winnipeg to Barrie, Ontario to pick me up about 3 days after the accident. And, you know, it was kind of cool. As a long-distance truck driver, I saved a lot of money. There's a good news and bad news thing, because when I came home, I had a pile of money, and with only one arm, I couldn't get behind the wheel. And I had nothing but time on my hand, and I certainly couldn't stand to look at myself in the mirror. And I had failed as a carny. I had failed as a trucker. I took my bank card and spent my entire life savings over the ensuing month. And it was a significant amount of money that I blew for it. My heart stopped on 4 separate occasions during that month. None of my friends that I was using with did any. Well, one person hit me in the chest once. That was my youth. I had a friend that I used to use with way back, who I hadn't hung with for about 11 years. He was a business partner of the guy who I was renting from. And this guy had found, I don't know what the hell he found. I just knew that he was going to these 12-step fellowships. I thought that he had found God or ketchup or whatever. I had no clue what it was. But he seemed to not hang out with me anymore. And he phoned me up and invited me to my first Narcotics Anonymous meeting. 31 years, almost every day I used. And I'd only, prior to that one occasion, walked into one 12-step meeting. It was about 15 years before the truck accident. One of the women that I had lived with drank all of my booze and used all of my drugs. So it was quite obvious to me that she had a problem. So I'd seen these ads on TV for Al-Anon, and I looked up in the phone book and found an Al-Anon meeting. And well, she had a problem, and like I was connected with her, so like this must be the place for me. So I showed up. It was a Thursday evening. A church up Belmont and Aikens, I think, which is like kitty corner to where Genesis is these days. I walk in, I was 10 minutes late, there were these two little old ladies with blue hair bitching about their asshole husbands or whatever it is that they were doing, and I really didn't feel as though I was in the right place. And when they told me that it was an Al-Anon women's meeting, I knew I was in the wrong place. So when my buddy suggested that he was going to take me to a 12-step fellowship, I was a little reticent. Because, that was my introduction to 12-step meetings, and I saw that stuff you see on TV, you know, the high school gym with the torn up basketball hoop and the guy that stands up to the podium and speaks into the microphone and gives us the prerequisite feedback, and 9 or 10 derelicts sitting in rows of wooden versions of these plastic chairs. This is my mind's eye thing. And I described this to my buddy, and he goes, you know, I've been in recovery for 11 and a half years. I still haven't found one of them. I was thinking of taking you to a meeting where folks were sitting around in a circle and sharing what it is that they're doing today not to use. And at the end of the meeting, hold hands and say a prayer. Some people come up and give you a hug, and some people are going to give you their phone number. And then if you're lucky, somebody will take you across the street and buy you lunch. And they'll invite you to keep coming back. What meeting you want to go to, Marsh? Well, I'm a pretty bright guy. I've got a couple university degrees. So, beat up high school gym with torn up basketball hoop and feedback. Hugs, phone numbers, and free lunch. It's a no-brainer. He picked me up and took me to my first NA meeting the following morning. And, I climb into his 4x4, and he takes a look at me. Got to understand, it's not. It wasn't real easy to look at me those days. I wasn't. I only had half the skin of my face, so it was nowhere near as pretty as I am today. I can thank plastic surgery for this, or curse it as the case may be. He looked at me and he goes, Marsh, I suggest you put on your seatbelt. I look at him and I go, the big tough truck driver man. Where do you get off suggesting that I put on my seatbelt? He goes, flip down the visor, asshole. So I flip down the visor, and you gotta understand, my left arm is strapped against my body. I look in the visor and I see my face. He goes, maybe it's time you start living based on suggestions of other people. Click. On the ride to the first meeting, he did talk about... I don't really remember exactly what he said, but it was, you know, Marsh, walk in, hold your head high, grab yourself a lousy cup of coffee, sit your ass down, blah, 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 enjoy the roller coaster, fasten the seatbelt, enjoy the roller coaster ride that just might save your life. So, fine, whatever. I walked in, I sat down at the back of the room with a lousy cup of coffee, and there's a guy behind a table who, well, started the meeting like we started the meeting, and I figured he was the boss of NA. Well, and, like, he asked various people to share, and it sounded as though my buddy had been on the phone with everyone in that room and shared little bits and pieces about my story. I was listening to what they were saying. Because he suggested that I open my ears and maybe my mind. Get honest that that I might be sick. Be willing to accept that you know what it is that you're doing today to not use, and maybe if I tried that it would work for me. But I was really pissed off because he had obviously called and ratted me out to you guys. There are pieces of my story that people were sharing that could only have happened to me. When the boss looked across the room and said, hey, Marshall, do you feel like sharing? First of all, I was blown away that he remembered my name. And then I went, hi, guys, my name is Marshall, and this is my first NA meeting, and I guess I think I'm an addict. And everybody in the room said, hi, Marshall, welcome. I said whatever the hell it is that I said. And everyone said when I was finished, thanks, Marsh, keep coming back. I had $1.65 in my pocket. So they obviously didn't want my money. I know it was $1.65 because I had that $1.65 in my pocket for my first month clean. That was bus fare to get my ass out of there. I never went hungry. I never went without cigarettes. You guys made me feel at home. I remember before that first meeting, I got myself all gussied up. I shaved
to the side of the face, because there wasn't that side. And I had plastered down my hairs, because I was told I was going to get hugs. And every man in the room gave me a hug. I was prepared for phone numbers, and I got four men's phone numbers. And then I had the opportunity of a lifetime. My buddy had to go back to the office, and he dished me off to some folks and said, "You might want to sit with Marshall over lunch." This is the lunch that saved my life. People were asking me questions, and we're talking about the program, and I don't know. I attribute the fact that I'm here today to that lunch. I was asked some really tough questions, and I answered them to the best of my ability at that time. And then, right at the end of the lunch, one of the people who was sitting with me asked me the toughest rhetorical question I'd ever heard. Like, she'd led up to this question, like, "Well, have you ever tried quitting before?" "Well, yeah, hundreds of times." "How did it work?" "Well, I'm here." "Well, why do you think this would be any different?" For my first year clean, I kept coming back to this person and coming up with a different answer to that one question. I thought that, like, if I could come up with that answer, then I'd pass the exam, I'd be cured. Now, years later, I found out that she dreaded my coming up to her any time during that first year. And, like, today she's one of my closest friends. But I truly do attribute my being here today to this friend of mine. Like, eventually I'd heard that I should get myself a sponsor. I go to a whole whack of meetings, 90 meetings in my first 90 days. Well, I had use of my left arm by the time I was 21 days clean. So I went out on the highways. I'm a big, tough truck driving man, and I got recovery under my belt. Yeah, it was 23rd of December 2000, at 11:58, I climbed into the Samming for the first time in a couple of months. My arm was a little stiff from steering and or whatever, but I remember these folks saying 90 meetings in your first 90 days, so I got in about 40 meetings in my first 20 days, and then every chance I could catch a meeting. And my cell bill during the first 90 days was astronomical, because I'd figured out to call 411 Narcotics Anonymous in every town. And I would schedule my run such that I'd arrive in town with exactly enough time that if there was a live human being who answered the Narcotics Anonymous hotline, that they would be meeting me as I'm screeching my truck to a halt and taking me into a meeting. Now, I went to meetings instead of sleeping. I went to meetings instead of eating. I didn't have time to, like, have people well, Winnipeg's home, so when I came to Winnipeg, I'd drive my tractor to the meeting and take up the whole church parking lot. So the 90 and 90 I took care of to the, well, I did 107 in my first 90 days, and I in my first 2.5 months of driving for this company, I was averaging 18,000 miles a month running single. That translates into about a third more than what is legal. Almost 50% more than is legal, and legal is 13 hours a day. So I was driving 19 hours a day, and I was catching a meeting almost every day. I think I figured out why I come off the road. That was insane, man. I called up one of the guys who was over for, who took me out for lunch at that first meeting. I was about 2 months clean. To say that I should get a sponsor, and my sponsor was, well, he had something that I wanted. Like the old sponsorship pamphlet says that you should pick someone that, that has what you want. Somebody who's had some experience in the fellowship. Well, he had a nice car and a pretty wife. So he had what I wanted. So I called him up and I asked him to be my sponsor. And I don't know, it was about 90 days clean when I asked this guy to be my sponsor. And never called him. Didn't work a single step with him. And I wasn't feeling any better. This guy was obviously a terrible sponsor. I was just shy of 6 months clean. I'm talking about a week shy of 6 months clean. And I made an appointment to sit down with him, and like I'd been working on my... I thought I had been working on my steps. I sat down with him, made an appointment to do my step one with him, and he pulls out this single sheet of yes-no questions and gives me like a gold star on the top of the sheet when I finish answering it, and he hands me this sheet and goes, "I'm going to suggest that you find a sponsor who's got more clean time than you do. Because I'm just back from a relapse, and your step one is better than mine." So I went out on a run to Montreal and got a phone call a day and a half later. I'd gotten unloaded in Montreal. And I heard that my best friend here in Winnipeg died as a result of a car accident. He'd gotten into a head-on collision. Both vehicles, nobody survived. And I was completely devastated. And my dispatcher had his thumb up his ass and just was not making it easy for me to make it back home for my buddy's funeral. And I let him know real clear that this truck was coming to Winnipeg for that first Saturday in June of 2001, and I didn't give flying hoot as to whether there was any freight in it or not. Because this guy had been a good buddy of mine since I was 19, and his family had asked me to eulogize him. And I wasn't missing this. Not for no job. And if they wanted to fire my ass, they were more than welcome to. They had promised me that I would be 10 days out, 4 days in. I had gone
5.5 months without 2 consecutive days off in Winnipeg. And I was an absolute wreck. And I delivered a load of cherry tomatoes to this place, this produce place out on Route 90. And they finished unloading me at 10 o'clock in the morning. At 11 o'clock in the morning, I was over at the Neil Bardal, that one right next to the Domino's Pizza. I like to think that when I pulled up there for the first time for that memorial service, what went through my mind was it was the Domino's Pizza and Crematorium, because there was like the funeral hall round behind Domino's Pizza. And I eulogized my buddy. And 4 different groups of people invited me out to toast him goodbye. And I said, no, I'm going to say goodbye to him in a different way. Went to my home group and picked up my blue key tag. That was the hardest day of my recovery. By far. And I've had tough days. Shortly after that, my bosses had offered me a sweet deal that turned sour fairly quickly. I learned that not everybody out there is living by spiritual principles. And they were saying whatever they needed to say to make sure that their truck was moving. And about a month after my 6-month birthday, I parked the truck. I left their cell phone in it so they couldn't get a hold of me. Left the keys on top of the battery, the driver's side batteries, and got a friend of mine to pick me up. And we dropped off my laundry at her place, and she dropped me off at a meeting. And I had gotten myself a new sponsor, somebody who talked about Chapter 5 of the basic text, get a sponsor, work the steps with them, go to a whack of meetings, do service. Sounded like a good idea to me. And formally worked my step 1. At that point, I was ready to surrender. Surrender, motherfucker, the war is over, I think was the words that I used. And I've been working towards victory since. I knew that using... When my buddy Skippy died, I knew that using wasn't the option I was willing to exercise. Because I know that I wouldn't have been too far behind him. I was told that this is a progressive disease. And I had nearly died 4 times during my last month using. So using wasn't the option I was willing to exercise. So I threw myself into
the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous. I quit my job as a truck driver, and I dedicated myself to getting clean and living clean. I worked my steps. God. Used the step working guide the first time through the steps with my sponsor, and that first step is brutal. Having gone all the way through that step working guide a couple of times, I know that if I can survive step one, the rest are easy. Because step one, I was told, is the only one that I can do perfectly. I'm an addict. You tell me I can do something perfectly, I make sure it's perfect. And what I really didn't understand was the only thing that I could do perfectly in that step one was surrender. And I will have to continue to do my step one constantly. I'm powerless over my addiction and everything else around me. I'm only powerless over three things: people, places, and things. I'm two of them, and I'm usually in one or the other. So, that's what I'm in my disease. That's where I'm at. My only difficulty with step two was, the restoration to sanity. Like, I believed that there was something bigger out there. There was no problem at all with that. I knew that I wasn't the greatest thing in the world, because you threw a piece of tinfoil on the floor, I'm down on my knees checking. I liked the smell of black pussycats with white stripes. You know? Like, you know, it was like... So, no problem. There's power greater than myself. It was the restoration to sanity that I had difficulty with. Because I had doubts that I was sane to start off with. Someone explained to me that just because I'm clean doesn't mean that I lose my sense of humor. And my sense of humor is like the crazy part about me. The only thing that I really take seriously in my life is Narcotics Anonymous. The rest is just details. By the time I actually started working a third step, I was no longer uncomfortable with that word God, because I recognized that it was followed by the words of our understanding. So turning my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him, well, you were my higher power. And you're teaching me how to live. So turning it over was pretty simple. Now, going through the steps, I learned a relationship with something bigger than me. Then I learned who I was, learned what things that I did, and I actually accepted that I'm just sick, not bad. And I continue to do these things, the healthier things. Early in my recovery, like I had heard at every meeting, if you want to join this group, see the chairperson or another member of the group, gives me a say in how the fellowship works.
gives me a place to do service. Service is an integral part of my recovery. And I joined a home group, and as soon as I got off the highway, I had the opportunity to be of service. I think I was 2 weeks off the highway, maybe three, when I was sitting on the front step of my home group and found out that, I was sitting on the step and this clean-cut dude walks up the walkway and he looks at me and goes, "You're one of them Narcotics Anonymous guys." And here I am trying to, like, guard my anonymity. Yeah. "You guys have to leave." It was like an hour and a half before the meeting. I go, "Huh? Well, you gotta move." So I move over to the other side of the step. And he goes, no, "You've gotta, you can't be here anymore. Can you help me move the furniture down the street?" Okay. I moved the furniture down the street. And I was sitting on the step. I couldn't write my step one anymore. I was a little, like, basket-cased. Because I'd just been told that my home group is about to be no longer. Because sometime that week, the building was going to be demolished. So I sat under the tree at the corner of the yard. A couple of folks in the fellowship show up and recognize that I was distressed, devastated, confused. Help me out, guys. am I getting close? And we held a meeting in this beat-up old top story of a way-too-hot duplex with two stacking chairs in the whole room, in the whole top floor, with our coffee maker and our cups. We used to wash dishes, so it was real cups. And it was the last ever meeting of the Jericho group in the Jericho house. And the following Wednesday, the wrecking ball came. On the Tuesday before that, it was like 3 days after the meeting, I thanked the church for having supplied us with a crack house to share our last meeting in, because, like, it really felt like one. No furniture, one roll of toilet paper, and, like, a coffee maker that made a lot of noise while we were at it just felt like home, man. We had a group conscience in one of the members' living rooms, and we decided that we'd go, seeing as I was the one that wasn't working, I would go hunting for places in the neighborhood to hold our meeting. And the following Wednesday, the wrecking ball came and knocked down that house, and it became a hole in the ground. We'd also decided that while we were still waiting for an agreement to have a meeting place, we would have somebody from our group. The words that we came up with was "babysit the hole." And I got the first Saturday of babysitting the hole, and the addict formerly known as Jericho Jeff, volunteered to babysit the whole of the second Saturday. And the third Saturday, a whole whack of folks were out at a camp out. That first Saturday, there was an addict in recovery who came by and said, "You know, the meeting isn't here." I go, "Yeah, I know. I noticed the building is absent." I recognize this. But I sat there for a full hour, and there was another addict who showed up, and we just sat down and visited. Successfully had tracked down a facility for the next for that group to meet at. Went out to the camp out, told people about it. Immediately caused several resentments, which we've gotten over, I think. But I was doing service. It was keeping me alive. It was keeping me clean. It was keeping me busy. It was keeping me away from using. It's about a month and a half after we moved into the new space that the guy who was the H&I chair came up to me and said, "You know, we need a place for a committee meeting." So I brought it to my group, and they said, "Yeah, sure." And I went, "Okay, cool. I've got the key." So I opened the doors and figured, cool, that's my service. I'll open the doors. Well, about, I don't know, 8-9 months later, he had resigned as chair of H&I, sponsee of his who came in around the same time I did, became the chair of H&I, and I became the vice chair. And within 6 months, he had resigned and I became the chair of H&I, just because I had a damn key. Like, I didn't like area service meetings. Like, people argued there. People didn't get along. It sure didn't feel spiritual. So I signed up for 2.5 years. Continued to have a position at my group. You know, having a home group, like, I don't know where I heard it. It might have been a speaker. It might have been I heard it shared in a meeting. Like, I've forgotten where I heard this first, and it really became important to me when I heard it, and it really sunk in. The most important part, the most important entity in Narcotics Anonymous Services, the group, and if I don't have a home group, I'm only a visitor. And I've gone for a sum total of 5 hours in my recovery since being about 2 months clean without having a home group. But I had already decided that I was changing where I was, the group I was going to join. Weeks before I had joined it, weeks before I had resigned the other group, or had made the decision to leave the other group. I do service at my home group. Luckily, people have taken away the coffee-making service from me, so I'm not poisoning you guys anymore. No, I didn't make it. You're safe. I
I continue to work my steps. I'm involved in with you guys. You guys have saved my life. Where has the program taken me today? I had a really rough week. About a week ago, I agreed to take over a business. And about Tuesday or Wednesday, I changed my mind. And then on Thursday, I changed my mind again. Like, I've been doing this roller coaster, and I've got a part-time job that involves my pissing people off during the first week of the month. So, like, you know, it's been one of those weeks. But every day I've been in contact with my girlfriend. I have an honest, loving relationship with somebody. I have an honest, loving relationship with lots of people. But, like, I have, like, we talk. We've been together for a year. And a month, and a couple of weeks, and a few days. So you can tell, you can ask her, she knows the date. I'm calendar challenged. I'm capable of having a relationship with people. I can go through whatever is placed in front of me. I talk about the hundreds of phone numbers in my phone. I've actually used a few of them this week. I still reach out to newcomers because they show me where I came from, and they also show me where my future can be. I can't forget that. I called my sister up right before this meeting and found out what it is that she wants me to bring over for Thanksgiving dinner. And we're going to be using real cutlery as opposed to plastic forks and knives and paper plates because they're not worried about me stealing the silver. I don't ever want to go back to where I was. And I always give my sponsees shit for using ever and never. But I don't ever want to go back there. You know, I love the basic text. I've studied it. I have most of it committed to memory. There's exactly one sentence in the entire basic text that's written in capital letters, bold print. And I think it's also the only sentence in the entire book that has ended with an exclamation point. Shit, it even comes with the word never in it. It's in the Roman numerals. That's the part before chapter 1. It was about the fourth time through the basic text before I recognized that there were pages before chapter 1. And there it was on page X, I. Just for today, you never have to use again. There's the program in a nutshell. There's my life in a nutshell. Thanks for letting me share.